Sister Annie thinks I'm a science project. But you know something? I guess I'm not so average anymore.
Hey everyone, welcome once again to the secret world of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch Alex Mack. I'm Jack, and joining me as always, the man, the myth, the legend, it's Callan!
Hey!
Hey, Callan! Good to hear you.
Good to hear you, my friend.
Hey, is it good to hear this?
Don't you want a Mac fact? Don't you want a fact?
All right, what bottom of the barrel fact did you go for us this week?
Kellen, the Big Mac is a hamburger sold by international fast food restaurant chain McDonald's. It was introduced in the greater Pittsburgh area in 1967 and was so popular it was added to the menu of all U.S. restaurants in 1968. In the U.S. alone, 560 million Big Macs are sold each year, which means that approximately 17 Big Macs are sold every second. Neither the Big Mac or the McDonald's franchise in general are associated with the children's television program The Secret World of Alex Mack, which aired on the Nickelodeon Network for four seasons in the mid to late 1990s.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you like a Big Mac, Callan?
Not especially.
No. When was the last time you ate McDonald's?
I don't know. I feel like it's a thing that you get at the airport sometimes. It's like you kind of get a get out of jail free card. It's like, well, yeah. I had to eat McDonald's. I was at the airport.
It was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's kind of an airport thing for me. I generally go for a McChicken though.
A classic airport McChicken.
Yeah, I'll have an airport McChicken. With a Coke Zero.
They should put the word airport before all their menu items at the airport.
One airport McChicken, please.
I have some airport nuggets, an airport thick shake.
Because it's like when you compare it to plain food, McDonald's seems like it is actual
it does,
food.
Actually, yeah.
But when you compare it to like real food, it's like, this isn't food. This isn't food at all.
Speaking of comparing real things to things that aren't really things, we watched an episode of the kids' TV show Alex Mack today.
We sure did, Jack.
And speaking of how changing the context of something makes it more appealing, we watched this show while we were on holidays. Mm-hmm. And in the context of having watched 14 previous episodes of this series, which weren't quite as good as this one.
Do you know that, like, it's funny watching this after being in lockdown for so long and now no longer being in lockdown. There's an element where I'm just like, oh, when I was in lockdown, I kind of felt like I had to watch them. Like that was just part of the lockdown rules that Dan Andrews got out. And he was like, okay, curfew at 8 o'clock, only leave the house once a day, got to wear masks. You also have to watch Alex Mack once a week and record. 30 minutes or so.
You're like, God, I mean, it's a struggle, but it's for the greater good.
It is for the greater good.
You know, and, you know, he got up there every single day and did his press conference where he would say the infection numbers and sadly the deaths and the ratings for Alex Mack that week. And we'd all check the DHS Twitter every morning.
I tell you what, Jack, though, I'm wearing my North Face today.
You are. It's good news.
It's good news
on the Alex Mack front.
It's good Alex Mack news, Jack.
And the good news is that episode 15 of season 2 of The Secret World of Alex Mack, Mack TV, was a ripper.
It was a good one.
It was so good. Should we get on the beers?
I'm already on the beers.
So, 15th episode of the second season of Secret World of Alex Mack. They are really on a tear with these episodes.
I feel like they finally found their stride. I don't know how long it can last, but hopefully forever. If there's one thing that I've learned in life is that things generally, when they're good, they last forever.
They stay good forever. Well, I mean, they say now that, you know, with the world the way it is, we're kind of due for good episodes of Alex Mack. Like, it used to be once every 100 years, but now they're saying, like, it's a one in every 6 year occurrence.
You know, those 2020 episodes of Alex Mack that we watched were no good, but I'm really looking forward to the 2021 episodes of Alex Mack. I feel like they'll be much better.
So this episode, Mack TV, it centers around Alex Mack and her friends, their audiovisual studies class. Early in the beginning of the episode, they're informed by their audiovisual teacher, Mr. Dobreski, that they're going to have a short film competition competition where students are asked to pair up and make a short film 5 to 10 minutes in length. And the winner of the film will be, what do they get if they win?
They get an automatic A in the class.
Automatic A in the class and everyone applauds.
And yeah, some sort of medal or something.
Yeah. So in the class, each the main students sort of fantasize about what's going to happen when they inevitably win the competition. Ray does his little, has a fantasy about his Oscar speech where he wins the prize. Lewis has his own little fantasy about him winning the prize. Alex has a fantasy about her winning the prize and being awarded by her sister, who finally admits that Alex is more talented than her.
I really like this sequence because it's like it starts on Ray, it pans over, and it's like, wait, is it going to do one for Lewis too?
Yeah.
It's like, yep. And then it manages to just go through every character we've ever met and give them a little fantasy sequence where it was good. Like, I mean, I didn't mind that the opening went for about 4.5 hours because the sequences were just so good.
Yeah, it was great. And the last character who gets a fantasy about this is Robin. And everyone else has had a fantasy about them winning the awards, but Robin is like a personification of her internal anxiety.
It's so good. It's the teacher is giving the awards and he's kind of doing the speeches for everyone. And he just turns the camera, points it and goes, wait, is that Robin? Get her out of here. You can't be in here.
She does not deserve to be here.
And then it cuts back to her and she's just like, you know, pulling her collar and going,
oh my God, he's right.
It's very good. I don't know. I missed most of the next scene because I was laughing so hard.
So the main Alex and Ray team up to make their movie while Lewis decides to go out on his own as kind of a solo writer, director, producer, and star auteur.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a film about kind of a documentary about trust where essentially he goes around lying to people about things and then sees how it all plays out.
Yeah, it was not a very good premise.
Once again, I'm stupefied as to why everyone hates Lewis's personality so much.
Yeah, this doesn't add up, does it?
Yeah. So he does that. First, he tells Kelly that Hot Scott is breaking up with her. And she believes him.
And I thought they'd already broken up because Hot Scott seemed to be very into Alex in the previous episode. But,
Kelly was away on holiday with her family.
And
so,
we all know when Kelly's away, Hot Scott does play with George Mack.
Yeah. Don't hate the play, hate the game, Callan.
Mm. I hate both.
Yeah. You like Robin.
Yeah.
So that's Lewis's film. And simultaneously Ray and Alex go out to film. Ray's idea is to film a like action-packed mountain biking adventure extravaganza.
Yeah.
Out in the desert of California.
BMX Bandits 2.
So Alex and Ray are out in the desert and they're filming Ray's movie. And because Alex is nervous about being on camera, she's glowing yellow. Meanwhile, Dave and Vince are also out in the desert testing out this new machine that's been built by the plant that can detect trace amounts of GC-161 from up to a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out trying to calibrate this machine and test it out in the desert, and it suddenly picks up traces of GC-161 over where Alex is. So they jump in the Humvee and chase down this kid on her bike. She flips. She actually hits a rock and flips off her bike and is lying down in front of the Humvee, which screeches to a halt. And between the time that Vince and Dave get out of the car to see what's going on, she's puddleified and she's hiding under the car. So she gets away, but Dave happens to find on the ground the lens cap of her camera, of Ray's camera. So they head back to the plant, and Ray and Alex head home to see what their footage looks like. Vince and Dave realize that they can use the lens cap of the camera to match it to a camera that's been hired from one of the local camera shops, and they can track down the person doing the filming and therefore track down the kid who they detected the traces of what GC-161 on. So they come to the school, to the audiovisual class, with Daniel Atron, and announce that Daniel Atron has decided to sponsor the film competition on the condition that, and she's going to bump up the prize to $5,000 on the condition that Daniel Atron gets to be the sole judge and is allowed to watch all the videos of the children. So in the meantime, but before this has happened, God, this episode's getting complex.
It's dense.
It's a dense ep. So while all this has been happening, the Mac family has had a visitor, Grandma Mac, who is someone's mother, either George or Barbara.
I assumed it was Barbara's mother. But
I think it was because she's referred to as Grandma Hoffman later.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But George and Barbara both call her mum.
Yeah. Do you call your in-laws mummy and daddy?
Absolutely not.
Mama? Jackie hungry, mama?
Oh, God.
Is that how you talk to you?
So Grandma Mac is there, or Grandma Hoffman, and everyone, she's really positive and really lovely and generous with compliments and cooks everyone breakfast, but everyone hates her.
Fucking bitch.
Fucking grandma's here to be nice and supportive to everyone again.
Yeah, I did not understand why everyone was like, immediately Annie has spent no time with her.
Yeah.
And Barbara's like, someone's here to see you.
Yeah.
She walks in, gives Annie like 10 compliments, tells her how good looking and smart and talented she is.
Mm.
and Annie is just like, I cannot stand another second around this crazy bitch. F- you grandma.
Just giving her the finger.
And like, yeah, it was bizarre, like just how much they hated their very nice grandma. And it's like, you know, I think, like, isn't the trope generally with grandmas that you don't like that they're like horribly racist or
yeah, I think it was just that sort of 90s sitcom trope that she's just a bit overbearing and she, you know, she sees a smudge on Annie's face so she licks her thumb to wipe it off. Like, it's very,
yeah,
it was very kind of stereotypical, but maybe a bit uncomfortable how much they hated grandma.
Yeah, it did all kind of come together in the end though. I'm like, why have they done this with this character? But we'll get there. It's a good payoff.
It is a good payoff. Well, the payoff is that instead of Alex insists to Ray that he can't submit his great action-packed chase sequence movie that he's filmed of Alex getting chased by Vince and Dave in their Hummer. So instead, Alex suggests that she makes a documentary called A Black and White Life, which pits ultra-positive grandma with super-negative Robin.
Mm.
And they take them to a park, and the grandma sort of waxes lyrical about how much she loves being in the park, and there's everyone's friends, and there's flowers and trees, and it's a beautiful day, and everything's wonderful. And then Robin explains how the park is awful because there's killer bees and pollen and the sun burning through the ozone layer and giving us all cancer.
I loved it.
It was so good. Robin is the best.
I just, like, as soon as they like cut to Robin and the super nice grandma sitting on the couch, I was just like, ooh, get ready to smile face because you're gonna enjoy this a lot.
Warm up those cheeks because they're going north.
Remember what this feels like? What is this?
What is this feeling?
Enjoyment. That was very good. I liked it a lot. And I'd like to subscribe to their magazine.
So speaking of magazines, I was at the post office this morning and I glanced at the magazine rack, and there's a magazine that you can pay $8.95 for and get it every month. And it's called What Doctors Don't Tell You.
Oh, no.
Like a print magazine.
So it's basically the print magazine version of this. Doctors hate this.
Like, yes, yeah, exactly. And there's like cover stories like COVID prevention and why statins don't work. And I flicked open to one article and the headline was Doctor 10%, only 10% of medical treatments are effective.
Oh, no. Where were you? What was this, at a news agency?
It was like a news agent post office combination.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah. And then that annoyed me so much. And I looked at the magazine next to it and it was Tan, the magazine for nudists in Australia.
And you're like, now we're talking.
I was like, that's what I'm into. And I flicked through that. And that was a much more positive experience.
Yeah, just cover to cover, 90-year-old naked bodies.
Yeah, yeah, but it's and like it is, but it's like there are all the photos are taken with like a watering can covering the genitals.
Mm, yeah,
you know, like really tasteful nudes of nudists. It was really good.
Yep. And there's the famous section why I don't wear shorts.
Yeah. anyway, so that brings us back to the classroom, the audiovisual class, where it's time for everyone to show their movies. And there's a real the undercurrent of this episode is a real rivalry between Lewis and Ray and Alex about who's going to win this competition.
Yeah.
So it's time to play the tapes and judge them. And Daniel Atron turns up and announces that she's judging the competition. And the teacher calls for Ray to submit his video. And Ray opens his bag and he realizes he's got two tapes in there and neither of them are labeled. One is the Robin and Grandma tape, but the other is the tape showing Alex glowing as a result of being infected with GC161. So Ray doesn't know what to do. He's sweating. He's got these two unlabeled tapes and he just hands one at random to the teacher and hope for the best, and they put it in the VCR. Then lo and behold, it's the tape with Alex glowing on it. But before it gets to that section of the tape, Alex uses her powers. Remember how Alex has powers?
Oh yeah.
She zaps the PowerPoint and blows up the VCR and they can't watch it. And because it's a public school in the US, they only have one VCR to go around.
I really love that. Yeah. That line. This is the school's only VCR.
It's 1996. And so Vince suggests that they take all the tapes back to the plant where they can repair the VCR there. And Daniel Atron can judge the tapes herself. So while they're leaving the school, Alex manages to use her powers to sneak the tape out of the VCR. And as a result, her powers go undiscovered. But they are also disqualified from the competition because their tape disappears and Lewis wins.
Mm.
God, it took me almost as long as that episode went for to describe what happened in that episode.
It was a dense one. And I think, you know how we often give the show crap because it never sets anything up. Mm. This episode did such a good job of setting stuff up and paying it off at the point where it was like, that's a weird character choice. I wonder why they've made that. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So like it starts off with that dream sequence where it goes around to each character in the school and they have their little fantasy sequence.
Yeah.
And it felt like just like a little throwaway thing. But each of them was kind of like setting up what their motivation or driving force was for the episode.
Yeah.
Even little throwaway jokes, which were funny by themselves, worked to be setups. Like there was the bit where Ray puts in the videotape and they're going to watch the footage that they've just taken after they've been chased by Vince, and it's like footage of his cousin's birthday party, and Ray just like smiles and said, oh yeah, it's just my cousin's birthday party, I'm taping over it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny just by itself.
Yeah.
And then they use that to so that when they put the tape in later, they know that it's the tape that's got the bad footage on it, because that footage of the birthday party comes up. And it's just like all of these little setups and payoffs. The Robin and the grandma setup and payoff.
Yeah.
The Lewis continuing payoff. It was just very well written.
This is a good show. I'm saying it. Alex Mack, The Secret World of Alex Mack, is a good show.
Yeah.
I knew it was a good show. I hadn't seen it for 20 years.
Yeah.
But when I had the idea to make this podcast, I was like, I'm pretty sure this is a good show.
I feel like it's coming into its stride now. Mm. Like they were kind of just figuring it out. But this was just like, this felt like it was an episode that was written and they maybe did more than one draft.
Yeah.
Like they didn't just say go and then stop once they had 20 pages. Yeah.
It got punched up at some point by someone else involved with the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably got like, you know, Joss Whedon or one of those like famous like punch up guys came in and just like gave it a comedy pass.
Mm, an uncredited rewrite.
Patton Oswalt came on and like put some jokes in there. What about if Ray records over his cousin's birthday?
That's funny. What about if the grandma's nice but everyone hates it?
Good
stuff.
I mean, I am part of me is I want to do the A-B test of play this to me now while I'm in high spirits because it's holidays and it's nice weather and, you know, we're not locked in our homes.
Yeah.
And played the same episode to me like 6 months ago when it was just like, it was the worst of times.
Yeah.
And see how much of it is the environment. But I really liked it.
I don't know. I feel like my 2020 mood has remained pretty stable. Like I was able to enjoy good episodes of Alex Mack 6 months ago. There weren't that many of them, but I was able to enjoy them when they came up.
That's true. There were moments where Alex Mack was legitimately like the light in the light in my life. Remember that episode where Ray got powers?
Oh, God, the secret world of Ray Alvarado. Remember the episode where Alex stole a car?
Yeah, that one wasn't so good. But yeah, no, it's good. We've had like, I think this is like the biggest streak that we've had. Two episodes that were good in a row.
Two episodes in a row. Two killers in a row.
It's just good stuff.
Yeah, rock solid.
Did you ever do like AV club or film stuff at school?
Absolutely did. I did media studies in year 11 and 12 and it was my favorite class.
Mm.
And it's what led me to study film and television at university where I met my good friend, Callan Rowe.
Hello.
That's Cal. But yeah, I remember doing this sort of stuff. Like we had to... I did it for 2 years. I did it in year 11 and 12. And each semester, you made a film. And I spent a really long time on them.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were, for a film made by like a 16-year-old with his mates, I feel like they were like rock solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there were no episode 15 of season 2 of Alex Mack, but they weren't bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty high bar.
Yeah. And I even remember having like having like snooty opinions about what constituted a good student film. Like I had a real issue. I was really into like picking the soundtracks for my films.
Yep.
And I had a real issue with other people making films. If there was a scene where if there was anything sneaky or any theft happening or anything like that, people would always just use the Mission Impossible theme.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd be like, guys, there are literally trillions of songs to choose from. Let's move on. Let's be a bit creative. So I would sit there in my turtleneck and my beret smoking a cigarette in the back of the class.
Yeah, I feel like that is a very student film thing to do, which is just like lift a song from your favorite movie and put it in your thing. Mm. Like... Little Green Bag or whatever
yeah.
in the torture scene in yeah. your student film.
Were you making films as a teenager?
We didn't have media studies at my school, but I did find a way to make films for a few other classes.
Yeah, okay.
I made like an animated film for my art class.
Oh, yeah.
It was very emo.
Yeah. Can you tell me the storyline? I'm so desperate to hear the storyline. What was it called?
I think it was called Gargoyle. It was about a gargoyle.
Yeah, right. Oh, cool.
And it was like, I used to make all these little animated films and put them on Newgrounds. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, Newgrounds? Yeah. We won't be able to watch those films after the 31st of December when Flash goes down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's sad. I did go back a couple of years ago and they're still there.
Oh, really? Let's record these for prosperity.
Yeah. So Gargoyle was a real emo one. It was like about this gargoyle. He's all alone on this church and he like cuts himself off from the church. He like hacks himself off and kind of like waddles into the city. And then in the city, they're all like, gross gargoyle. And they're all these like kind of weird, like smiley people. And they're all wearing like suits and ties. So he puts on a suit and a tie.
Oh God.
and then no one, they don't recognize him. And then he works his way up the corporate ladder, becomes like the CEO of this, this corporation. He's like looking at a photo of his family and he's like married to one of the smiley people. And he's got this weird, like half smiley, half gargoyle child, but he's like real empty inside. And he's like looking in the mirror and he's like single tear goes down. And then he like rips off the, the tie like in front of all his employees, and then they're back to like, oh gross, get out of here, you're a gargoyle. And then so he like jumps off the top of the building because that's where his office is, and you think he's like, you know, committing suicide, but then his little gargoyle wings come out and he just flies home and he lands.
Gargoyle, the Callan Rowe story.
It's a happy ending though. He lands on the other side of the church, and then there's like a nice little lady gargoyle there. And he's like, oh, hey, how you doing? And then they
Oh, that sounds like a lovely film.
it was all in black and white.
Like animated films are hard to make.
Yeah, I worked on it like a lot. I spent a lot of time.
Yeah.
On
it. Did you think it was going to be your magnum opus?
I don't know.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah. I just used to like doing it. I used to do it for fun. Like I did it. I probably would have done it anyway, even if I could. Like it felt like I'd kind of grifted the system by letting me do it and like do it as a project.
Yeah.
And I used to get like a special pass where I could just like go into the editing
suite,
which is weird that they had like a special editing computer at school, but they didn't offer film studies or anyway. So I could just like go in there by myself. So I used to just spend hours in there working. And then I made like we had to make a Halloween costume in art class as well. And I made like a paper mache version of the smiley guys.
You made merch.
Yeah, I made merch. It was pretty good. Yeah,
that's good.
We made a movie in drama as well, maybe in like grade 9. We were a bit younger.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, you do it straight onto a full-size VHS tape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the way that you edit it is you've got two VHS players connected and you're like, record onto one, and so all of the cuts have that kind of like it's like smash cut, and it's like, no, this cut's gonna take 3 seconds. But it kind of added to it a little bit.
Yeah, that's the charm. I think that the third film I made in high school was my favorite one. It was called Handyman, and it was
a man made entirely of ham.
It was kind of like a romantic tragedy about this woman who's like essentially like a bored housewife who goes around her house breaking stuff so she has an excuse to ring various handymen to come and fix it.
Yeah.
Like she kicks down her letterbox and she like pulls a pipe out from under the sink. She invites these handymen to come over and fix her stuff. And you think she's doing it just because she's bored. But then there's like a flashback sequence where her husband, who is a handyman, leaves her dramatically. And she's trying to like reconnect with him by calling every handyman in the phone book.
Does she meet her husband in the end?
No, but I think she finds someone new.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember how it ends. My mum still got them, but they're on DVD, and God knows how I'd watch a DVD in 2020. So
I think if you like put it on this, like if you're, put a torch up to it and reflect it on the wall.
Move
it around really quickly. You can see.
Spin it on my finger.
There's no sound, but you can see the visuals.
Well, if you're making your own films with actors in them, you often need costumes. You know what sometimes is part of a costume?
She doesn't have a cat. Her mom's name isn't Pat. But she always, well, almost always wears a hat. Alex Mack wears a hat.
How about that?
How about that?
Look, not going to talk a lot about the hats. A lot of classic hats in this one.
I didn't even notice the hats, Jack. I was so engrossed by the theater of the story.
I just want to quickly mention two hats in particular. Robin is back with her big fur, like almost a top hat thing she wears sometimes. It's not really a top hat. It's got maybe a Russian hat. I don't know, but it's black and it's furry and it's fucking ace. And there's the scene where Vince and Dave are testing out their GC-161 detecting machine. They're both wearing bright orange hard hats to go with their orange high-vis. And then when they run down the kid, but the kid disappears, Vince is really annoyed, so he throws his hard hat on the ground in frustration, and then Dave copies him and does the same thing. And I thought it was cute.
Yeah, there was some good Dave in this episode.
There was some tip-top Dave. Dave eats a sandwich in this episode.
He's got this really extravagant sandwich. Yeah. I was just thinking, where did he get that sandwich?
And he's just having a picnic.
You go to the deli.
Hey, this episode was called Mac TV. Do you remember the Ferrells? And then do you remember Ferrell TV?
I do. I probably remember Ferrell TV better than the Ferrells. Because I much preferred the Ferrells. Ferrell TV was the one that played more regularly. I used to it used to get me every day. I'm like, oh, the Ferrells are on. And there's like, oh, no, it's just Ferrell TV.
Ferrell TV. Lame. For those of you who don't know, who are maybe listening not in Australia, the Ferrells was this amazing kids TV show. Hang on. The Secret World of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watched the Ferrells.
Yeah. Yes, please.
I'd consider that. So it was this show that was on our national broadcast of the ABC in the 90s. And it was the Ferrells were a group of puppets.
Gross.
They were
puppets.
Kind of like gross, like they were kind of like demented Muppets, I guess.
Yeah.
That kind of vein.
So there was Darren the dog, Mediglianna the cat. That rabbit Mexi.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world of Feral TV. I forgot Raddus the Rat.
Raddus the Rat. And like the rabbit's name was Mixie because she had myxomatosis.
Oh, Jesus, was it? That's so funny.
And they were just these disgusting animals who lived in the sewers, and it was gross, and it was excellent.
And then there was a cane toad and a cockroach.
Yeah, the cane toad's name was Kerry because he was like a thinly veiled satire of Kerry Packer.
This is a pretty adult show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was real good.
And then the Keith the koala wasn't in Feral TV, was he? He was just in the Ferals.
I don't think so.
Or was it because in the in the original Ferals there was kind of a bit of a Ferals versus native animal thing going
on. And then I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page. Oh, Mixie hosted like the ABC Kids programming block.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Remember that when she was like a host
when they had to ditch Aggro because he got me tooed.
Yeah, but Aggro's back. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I saw him in an ad for Uber Eats, and I'm like, let's not give Aggro any.
Aggro doesn't need to. Yeah, Aggro doesn't need to come back.
Aggro needs to calm down.
Yeah, Aggro needs to stay in his box where he's been for the last 20 years.
Mm.
Cheese TV. God, the 90s were great.
Yeah.
Simpler time. Remember when you could just go shopping with your grandma all day and hate her?
I was watching like The Mandalorian the other day, you know, that new Star Wars show. And I was just thinking like, Jesus Christ, imagine if this is what television was like when we were kids. Like we ate up Alex Mack and thought it was the best thing ever. And it was just like a kid would shoot some sparks out of his finger every now and then. Kids are so like have so much now.
Yeah.
But then also they
don't. I guess you only know what you know. Like if this was 1995 and we were like The Secret World of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch I Love Lucy, we'd be like, haha, this is old shit.
Yeah, I guess so. And there is still just like, I was thinking about this as well. Like, I think I was watching The Ghost in the Shell, the original 1996 anime. And it's just like, they don't really make them like that anymore.
They
don't invest that much in 2D, just really nice animation. And it feels like, you know, like we've lost the ability to make a certain type of movie. And it's like, it's got nothing to do with like the technical ability to do it. It's just, there's just no interest in it anymore. And it made me really sad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess like that type of movie is just gonna never exist again.
Well, I mean, I don't know, Callan. I certainly know of someone who is certainly an aficionado of hand-drawn 2D animation with, you know, really heavy sort of adult themes of conformity in a consumer society. I think there's certainly room to bring back that.
Are you talking about Ray Alvarado?
Yeah,
I reckon Robin would do some good little like really angsty teen movies.
Robin is kind of the Callan of the Secret World of
Alex Mack. She really is.
Does that make me the grandma?
I think you're probably closer to a Lewis.
Yeah, I am. Oh, you know that feeling when you realize you're Lewis? you think of yourself as a Ray, but then someone else explains that you're a Lewis and you go, oh,
can you make a meme that's just like when you realize you're Lewis and then a picture of Lewis like looking at the camera with those like sunglasses on.
Sunglasses on his down, like held down on his nose.
When you realize you're Lewis Driscoll. Can we just start using that and like not explain to anyone who Lewis Driscoll is? I feel like we can try and memeify.
Yeah, I think we can.
We should try and just kind of like get Alex Mack back in the culture, like start getting some like reaction gifts of Ray and, and Annie and George Mack. Well,
when Ray puts his arm around you.
I think they're due for a revive.
I think so. Absolutely. Well, we will get working on that in the next week or so, but that'll do it for this episode of The Secret World of Callan Jack, in which Callan Jack watch Alex Mack. Callan, have you had a good time?
Yeah.
I'm having a great time with Alex Mack.
It's all okay.
You know, when you're sitting there watching The Mandalorian, you're like, this is good, but I wish I was watching Alex Mack.
I was a little bit thinking that. Like, I don't know. This is all very high production values and everything, but where's the heart?
How does the Mandalorian feel about his lovely grandma?
Yeah, no one's putting their arms around each other. No one's saying, well.
There's nothing like that. So join us next time as we watch episode 16 of season 2 of The Secret World of Alex Mack. In the meantime, email us on secretworldpod@gmail.com. Until next time, I've been Jack.
I've been Cal.
My best friend Ray thinks it's cool.
And my sister Annie thinks I'm a science project.
And she fucking hates her grandma. We'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Farrells have gone underground. Look what they have found. The cable to a TV station. Now their smells across the nation. As right as the ride, and Modigliana the cat. They discovered fame and fortune, and they're never going back. But they're in the